My guest today is the one and only James Dapachy. James has the honour of being the first lawyer that I've interviewed on the podcast that isn't a current practicing in-house lawyer. He is, in fact, the director and owner and lawyer at his own firm, Graverman. And the very day that we recorded this episode was, in fact, the very day in real life that he launched his new firm. And it was just too good of an opportunity not to take up. We were both presenting at the Happy Lawyer, Happy Life retreat. I opened the day with a keynote. He followed up and spoke after me. And as we sat back down, we were on such a high, that post-speaker buzz, I just felt like it was a real moment. And so I said to James, do you want to record an episode of the podcast right now? Let's celebrate that you have launched your new law firm. You're going out on your own. So we did. James, he's one of a kind. I loved everything that he shared. And I also love what he shares all the time. He is quite prolific online and social media. Some of you may know him as Coffee and a Case Note, the account that he has on Instagram and TikTok in particular, where he shares his summary of just really bite-sized, digestible case law that is kind of easy to understand. And then he focuses on very specific areas, but his style and his manner is so engaging and endearing. And I think that that's how we actually first connected, was via TikTok. And then it's gone from there. James is just one of a kind, a very humble and very intelligent human. He gives his two cents on what it's like to be a lawyer on the other side, being instructed by in-house counsel, and how we both play a role in serving the companies that we're working for or being engaged by. So it was an interesting conversation, something a little different. And I'm just super thrilled for him, kind of gone out there, backed himself and opened his own firm. So congrats to you, James, absolute legend. Thank you for being on the Council podcast. Enjoy this episode with James Dapachy. James,
yes.
Welcome to the Council podcast.
Beautiful
studios. We are meeting at the Happy Lawyer, Happy Life conference. You and I have just spoken. We've opened the conference. We've had morning tea. And I said to you, you know what? Let's have a podcast chat. Let's do it.
I'm delighted. Delighted with the scenery, delighted with the company, delighted with the refreshments. Mel and I are sitting here with two sort of very juicy looking mimosas. Mel, I'll cheers you. You have first sip.
Cheers.
I'll have another one in just a moment. I am really delighted to pop onto Council. I've never been on, long time follower, first time appearance. I'm not a member of the in-house Council, although perhaps maybe I am, because with big thanks for my career, Big Sis, I've had a bit of a career pivot today that we might end up having a chat about.
Indeed, we might. And I also have to point out, you are actually the first private practice lawyer.
Yes,
to come onto the podcast, and many have tried. And many have tried. Many have tried to come and meet and speak to their ideal clients, perhaps, these in-house lawyers, because we do work with external legal counsel and external, especially in your space when things get a little spicy and we get a little lit, little litigation.
Okay, okay, I'm with you.
And we need to brief it out. Mm. And I have held that space for someone special, who would come and speak to my wonderful community and not try and sell them, basically, because I know that that's not how you roll. And you're just a great dude. You're a podcaster. You're a content creator. We connected on TikTok and Insta and then LinkedIn, and then we've followed each other around the interwebs. This is the first time we're meeting.
Yes.
And I'm so happy to have you here. I have to start off with the first question that I ask all of my guests, James. If you had a limitless credit card, but you could only spend it at one shop, what shop would that be and why?
I still find this question challenging. Look, I've just listened to a great session from Mel on mindset and frame of mind. And so my first response is like, oh, not me. Like, can I spend it on someone else or can I donate it to charity? If it was a pure indulgence, I think bespoke suiting. I think I'd spend a ridiculous sum of money on having a soup made and perhaps a shirt and a couple of ties and some braces. So the Limitless credit card, I don't even know what the numbers are for something like that, but that'd be solemn enough to put to use in only a fantasy scenario.
Do you have any particular suitors, I don't know what you call them, tailors in mind? Like, just for the gentlemen that might be listening, because I have no idea. I know Will Valor in Brisbane is fabulous, fantastic for custom and bespoke. And Dougald Hamilton, who we love, fan of the show, 2-3 Legal, he might be low-key hurt that he's not the one that gets to do this.
And tough.
Yeah, well, yeah. he has someone in Brisbane that he loves. But where's a Sydney bloke going to go and get the tailoring done?
Do you know, I'm so embarrassed to say, I barely know. There's a tailor that I walk past and have long admired called Zinx. But I imagine I'd start Googling and asking people who dress well. And I've got a friend who's into sort of bespoke suiting. So I'd probably pick a few brains. Because I'd have a limitless credit card to spend on these things. I'd go figure out what the landscape was like.
Awesome. Love that. Love a bit of fashion. So let's take a little wind back memory lane. I know a little about your story, but not all of my listeners will. You come from a long line of legal professionals. Could you tell us why and probably more how you came to study law and then practice law, and if that was your destiny? Because I feel like it might have been genetically.
The lawyer gene. So my dad's a lawyer, and his dad's a lawyer, and his dad was a lawyer. And so all I knew growing up, Mel, was I'm never going to fucking do that. and then, of course, life sort of happens. I left high school and I did arts, which for your American listeners is sort of more social science. So a lot of history, sociology, that sort of thing. And I did some economics at uni, and I got reasonably sort of nice enough marks there from a university that looks nice on CVs and that sort of thing. And having done that, I reflected on being 22 years old and having worked in a pub and sort of hosted trivia nights and that sort of thing, to saying, oh, I probably need to have a qualification that's going to equip me for employment and the world of work. And so I elected to start studying law. Even at law school, even in final year law school, I was like, I'm not going to be a filthy sellout lawyer, man. I'm going to be a cool pop music journalist or whatever. And so sort of even through my path in university, I was sort of reluctant to kind of commit. And then going into practice, I was just in kind of private practice, sort of small suburban firms. And after a couple of years, I sort of started to realize I had a bit of competence in a couple of areas. And that feeling of when you get a tiny little bit of mastery in an area, it can kind of be quite self-fulfilling. Of like, it's a nice feeling to feel like you're helping people. It's a nice feeling to feel like you know a couple of things. And it's a nice feeling to be able to sort of invest in your own expertise. So never wanted to do law, and then kind of did it as a bit of a employment move, and then became employed, and sort of over time managed to fall a little bit in love with the profession. And I feel like my path is massively privileged for any number of reasons, but one of the great number of privileges I bring to it is that I wasn't sort of captain of the debating team at age 12 and like burning brightly to be doing law, and I must do it. It's been more a slow unfolding romance, a slow burn that's sort of really, really burning along nicely now. But as for genetic destiny, it's an interesting question, right? I was lucky to be raised by excellent parents, and my dad was always like, "Hey, zero pressure. You go do you." And he and I worked at the same firm, which has my surname in it, for 5 or 6 very happy years. I feel now maybe I always was destined to be a lawyer, and I had to host a few trivia nights and enter a few rap battles along the way to sort of get there. But it's been a long winding road rather than a direct and short one.
Got it. As I feel like almost all of our careers are, right? As far as I know, you have practiced in the back end of things in litigation, and with a particular interest around, I don't know, all the spicy Corporations Act stuff that happens with companies, with
people that own companies, that are partnered with companies when they don't like each other anymore. Yeah, there we go. He's giving me the thumbs up. I've nailed it. And I'm interested to delve into that. I'd also, you know, before we kind of get into how you practice now and what your future holds, for the in-house counsel, of which I suspect it's 97% of my listeners and a lot of early career lawyers and law students as well, but for the counsel, I'd like you to bring to mind maybe a GC that you've worked with over your many years, someone that just instructed really well, that you had a great outcome, the case, you know, went really smoothly, they briefed you well. Perhaps you're working with you know, Queen's Counsel, King's Counsel, you know, barrister as well, and you being in the middle, and it all kind of went well. If you can bring to mind one of those cases that you just really loved and as a practitioner was a great collaboration with the in-house lawyer, and if you've got that, talk us through how in-house counsel can effectively, you know, help run a great case and set up their company, their client for success when they're working with externals.
Yes. This, without wishing to be flippant about it, I feel like the number of in-house counsel I've worked with could benefit from some advice from you, Mel. There's often a deference that we receive in private practice as like, oh, okay, it's now off to the external lawyer and we'll just move out of the way and external lawyer will go do private practice lawyer stuff and we're just in-house. We're essentially business people. And I say with great respect that a number of the in-house lawyers I've met and worked with are not only very nice and not only very good lawyers, but in addition to those things, have often had a real operative humility where at their best, they're volunteering their thoughts, but they've often need to be sort of coached towards saying like, okay, so what do we think about this? Like, I don't just want to tick off. I want your brain. So the best in-house lawyers I've worked with have had that balance of humility to defer to us as the private practice lawyers and counsel we're working with, but have had that confidence to volunteer their expertise. And in my litigation space, I know a lot about these business breakdowns, but I don't know a lot about the business that the entity is involved in. And so the in-house lawyer to take an example, a software company or a cloud computing company is going to have so many things that I'm going to need to know, both from a sort of factual basis, but also in relation to fairly fine like court submissions and understanding evidence and that sort of thing. We're just saying, hey, here's all the evidence. See you later, external counsel. I'm going to need, so I withdraw need. You know, I like to think I'm pretty good whether I've got it or not, but my client, who's also your client,
yeah,
are going to benefit from your brain staying in it,
right,
even after the external counsel, right, are briefed in. So I guess if I was to try to boil that down into advice to our in-house colleagues, it would be, please don't undervalue your expertise both legally and of the fact patterns you're presenting, even in a pretty ugly, messy dispute of the kind I sometimes find myself in.
No, that's wonderful advice, and probably speaks to having the confidence, even though you're not necessarily the subject matter expert, doesn't mean that you don't have a lot of value to bring. Yeah, no, I really appreciate that. I feel like often when something is to the point where we really do need external help and we're briefing that out, it's just too big. It has to go out because we haven't got the resources and we don't have the expertise in the technical area. We also might not have the time, and it's kind of like, I just got to brief that out and move on to the next fire. I guess that's the tendency to want to brief it out like and forget. But I suppose what I'm hearing from you is that there's huge benefit, and perhaps even it might even, you know, assist in the overall outcome that we're all looking for, if they can stay involved.
If I can just build on that comment, it's a similar thing where me as a litigation solicitor, I've got some expertise and I like to think I'm reasonably good in my space, where I'll brief a barrister. And so the question will be asked of like, oh, well, hang on, if you're a litigation expert or if you're an experienced litigator, why are you then consulting with some other experienced litigator? And the answer is not quite as simple as two brains are better than one, but it's not actually too far from that in some ways. And I guess that's sort of the gauntlet I'd throw down to all of the excellent people listening is to say, I'm sure you'll be able to put it better than I can, but even in a very concrete and commercial professional way, to know your value and to understand that your client is going to benefit, despite, of course, the time challenges that we all face, despite that, any time you're able to devote to interacting with your external colleagues, your private practice colleagues, it's going to be super valuable for us, and we're going to gobble up that time if you're able to share it with us.
Yeah. No, I love it. You've just mentioned the bar and our learned friends at the bar, from which I feel really quite far removed from. I don't know a lot of barristers in the commercial space because, you know, luckily, and touch wood, I haven't had to. But I do have one experience of direct briefing, in fact, when we needed a particular piece of advice, and we were going, the parties agreed that we would take that as advice, as, you know, non-binding, but essentially, where do we land with it? We're like, right, we can't agree. It's very technical. Let's split the money, ask an expert, and then we'll go, you know, where the chips may fall. And that worked out quite well. That does seem to me to be uncommon. You're sitting in the middle of that relationship between the corporation and then having those relationships with the bar and helping navigate who's who and the best people placed. I want to ask about how you see, if you see the trend of direct briefing increasing, if it's warranted, when it's warranted, and why the solicitor externally in the middle can still add value.
So I might just start with a little note that when I say go to the bar, for I imagine like most podcasts of your kind, Mel, a number of our listeners will be in the US.
Totally.
So yeah. That'd be trial counsel, trial lawyers.
Thank you.
And so it's such a great question, because to tease out those relationships, and to explain the value of each, it's. There always tends to be a "you had to be there" sort of element to the discussion, because I have deep experience in what I do, and I have deep experience in what barristers do and what clients do. I go, oh, it's obvious, and it's then difficult to convey. The analogy or the language I try to use is that a barrister is a court-facing lawyer, and so for any interactions in a very direct, what is a judge going to think? That's barrister stuff, and I've got my own views on that, but my role, I say, is I'm a client facing court lawyer, and so that's when I want to turn to my in-house instructor and say, hey, Julie's over there getting the matter ready for trial, she's raised this evidentiary point, and then I want, you know, me to sit down with the in-house lawyer and say, well, have we got any historical emails setting this out? Or can we get some more evidence in relation to issue X? And I'm worried that this gives rise to issues A, B, and C. And so I'd want that sort of client-facing, court-facing delineation to remain in place because, firstly, it's more efficient. And secondly, it sort of acknowledges the value in deeper areas of expertise. Because there's one view that says, oh, yeah, if you're a court lawyer, just go to court, regardless of whether you're a solicitor or a barrister or whatever it might be. And so I say there's real value in that expert solicitor, expert barrister dichotomy. Do I see direct briefs increasing? I don't, but in saying that, it's in my interest that I don't.
Fair.
My whole business model is no direct briefs.
Yeah, that's why I'm asking.
Yeah. So, but let's reflect on how in-house counsel might be able to make it work well, because if I was in-house in an entity that sort of had similar-ish sort of issues bump up and down, perhaps a real estate owning entity that might have a lot of sort of tenancy type disputes or like possession type disputes of like, we want to come in and get these people out sort of things, I think there'd be value if I was in-house somewhere where I was seeing similar stuff come up, of just going and grabbing a cup of coffee with a couple of barristers in the space who are kind of 2 to 7 years out, that kind of pretty good but not yet absolutely imminent, to kind of say, hey, look, I know on your website it says I don't take direct briefs, but let's just go grab a cup of coffee and let me just pick your brain about it. No direct briefs is an approach that I consider many barristers take in order to avoid, I'll use the extremely offensive term, wackos, like, to avoid difficult clients having direct access to them and to say, no, I need a solicitor to help me manage the client in order for me to focus on the court work. I think if you were an in-house counsel interested in getting the solicitor out of the way, I think the best way to do that is to develop a nice casual professional relationship with barristers you like and trust. Barristers would probably like that as well. And so if I can just put myself even further out of a job, the people you might want to make friends with are clerks of barristers' chambers. And if there are people who are sort of in-house, who are coming up through the field, who are listening to counsel to try to sort of sharpen their blade and their offering to their employers and future employers, I think things like making friends with, you know, even making friends on LinkedIn or wherever it might be, with clerks of chambers and that sort of thing, clerks of barristers' chambers, and then getting invited to those barristers' drinks and barristers' sort of networking events to just sort of shake some hands, kiss some babies and make some friends, genuinely, because there is a middleman taking a clip element of litigation solicitors. And I say it's a middleman adding huge amounts of value and the clip is completely reasonable. But there are contrary views to that. And so I'd encourage anyone who's reflecting on how direct briefs might form part of their future to genuinely explore it, because there are a lot of commercially minded, switched on, easy to deal with counsel out there who, despite their website saying no direct briefs, would be nice to have a chat with and just, you know, see what the lay of the land is.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Take a sip of your mimosa. That was very insightful, and it's speaking to a world that I don't frequent, and a lot of us don't, by choice, because we've gone down the other end of the spectrum. And if we think of, you know, the legal profession, I often like to think of it as that continuum of, you know, commercially focused one end where the in-house sit as close to business, and then judicial and court focused at the other. And you kind of is sitting in the middle. And of course, we've got academics as well, even further left, closer to the law. And this beautiful dichotomy of law and business is on which a lot of us sit in the commercial space. So I love to ask these questions, and thank you for giving an insight into a world that I don't know enough about, perhaps. So I'm going to go to some drinks.
Yeah.
I'm going to go to some drinks.
You're not allowed
the drinks. I mean, look at us right now.
The networking element. You would dominate the networking element. Barristers of Queensland, make friends with Mel Scott.
thank you. Oop, almost dropped the mic. Right. Tell us about what happened today. James and I opened this wonderful conference, and I spoke first, and I warmed up the stage, I warmed up the room, and James came on next, and I'm not going to tell you what, you know, you tell us, what did you do today during your keynote?
If I can just wind back slightly, you did a little more than warm up the room. There's an anecdote I've repeated a couple of times. I'm afraid I did repeat it today as well, but I'll just linger on it for a moment if you'll indulge me, Mel. It's I used to make battle rap music on stage, and that's that fairly... It now looks extremely corny, but at the time it seemed very, very cool. Very cool. But now, no. But in any case, that's the one where you stand on stage and you do insults to each other. Generally, you'd like to go second in order for Mel to say something that might just capture the imagination, and I'll watch that and be like, oh, I'm going to flip that. I'm going to use what Mel said and twist it against her. And so you'd want to go second in order to have the opportunity to do that. But sometimes the risk you run in doing that is you get totally outclassed, and essentially the battle's over by the time you get the stage. Like, you get to stage because Mel's already won the crowd over. And so I went second after Mel, and there was certainly an element of my first 5 or 10 minutes kind of scrambling to find my footing of like, wow, like, I need to find some context here. So I utterly reject Mel warmed up the room. It was an excellent, gripping talk, and we've been speaking off mic about how I found it personally and genuinely quite sort of moving and inspiring for myself. So I will not allow Mel warmed up the room to pass.
Thank you.
So I then talked, and I spoke on a topic that I have spoken about a fair bit in the past, and so there's sort of a degree of working through the motions of like, hey, hi there, I'm a litigation solicitor, I market my practice online, here are some things online, here are some things you might do. And then at the end of that, Mel, I launched a law firm. And I was sitting next to you, and Mel, you're the star of the law firm's first TikTok. And it's been a really interesting and strange experience because, look, we spoke about your mentorship and the value of your speech earlier today. And I've been in a strange frame of mind. I've been very apologetic about it and even coming on the podcast to speak about it. But in essence, this was me, quote, launching it. I realize I don't even know what a launch is, but it's the first time I'm telling people it exists and inviting people to send it work, maybe in the future. Just at the moment, I'm just like, oh, there are like four or five more things I've got to do. But it was a real thrill to head up on stage and to kind of share this thing that's been an idea in my head. Until jumping in front of a room full of people and saying, this exists, and I caused it to exist. So it's a strange feeling.
I love it. It was very powerful, and it was the ultimate document don't create moment when you're looking at creating content online. And James does this so well anyway and always does. And I use Instagram more so, but TikTok as well, to document our lives a little and to have conversations and to build community instead of just like sitting down and creating these beautiful pieces of perfectly polished content, because it just never happens. We have full-time jobs, right? And family and responsibilities outside of that. So James literally documented creating a law firm and launching it instead of, I don't know, coming up with some beautiful hard launch website, LinkedIn post, something. I don't know. I just thought it was very inspiring and very meta. So thank you for sharing that with us. Tell us about the law firm, the name and the why,
yeah,
the plan, the vision.
These are all really good questions. It is, at its most basic, me with a laptop and a pair of board shorts. So it delivers legal advice on my areas of expertise. I'm trying to expand my thinking a little past how I've thought traditionally, and that's part of the reason for picking your brain, Melon, for being at the retreat as well. So it will perform that role of giving legal advice fairly straight up and down way. I think it'll sort of branch out in time to include a fairly rigorous type educational sort of offering. I like to think of myself as reasonably well informed in a couple of sort of fiddly areas of law that I can speak with on a little bit of authority. And so I think it'll end up...
What are they?
They're essentially...
Let's get nerdy.
Yeah, okay. So they are disputes between partners, and partners in the technical legal sense. So where in Queensland, well, and New South Wales as well, where the Partnership Act applies, and whether a commercial relationship is a capital P partnership is a pretty technical legal question. So while Mel and I might agree to, let's say, buy a piece of property, build a house on it, sell it and split the profits, that can just be a nice agreement to do that. But if that was to be a partnership, there'd be a different set of, or an additional set of obligations that would arise between you and I. And so that's quite a technical question. And so if you want to hear me talk about that for 2 hours, then I think Graverman could have an offering for you. Similarly, an area I call corporate disputes, where shareholders of a company, so Mel, you and I might be shareholders of Laptop Pty Limited, and Julie, the director of Laptop Pty Limited, might have run off with all of Laptop Pty Limited's money. Now, that's not a claim of Mel's. Mel can't bring that claim. Mel can't sue Julie. James can't sue Julie. The only entity that can sue Julie is Laptop Pty Limited. And if we're not directors, we don't control it. And so we need to seek leave to bring what's called a derivative suit, where you stand in the shoes of Laptop Pty Limited. So that sort of stuff is where I've got a bit of expertise. And then generally sort of what we call like minority shareholder issues, where I've been shut out, I've been forced out of my business, or no one's paying me dividends, or no one's giving me information, that sort of stuff. And then in addition to that, trustee beneficiary type disputes, if you're the beneficiary or trustee of like a family trust or a unit trust or some trust that holds property, and there are disputes in relation to that. So I said I wasn't coming on to sell stuff.
No,
there are plenty of firms who are good at that. You don't have to use my firm. There are plenty of good firms.
But we know, like, and trust you, James.
That's very generous, Mel. Thank you. And then in addition to that, I'm just trying to be open-minded because there are people making suggestions about extra things that Graverman might do. And I keep coming back to your talk earlier today. I'm trying to be open-minded and listen and not say, oh, not me, surely I couldn't do that. I'm trying to just say, well, it's very nice to be offered these things. And so I'm trying to just remain as open-minded as I can to the slightly more creative and on one view, slightly more interesting offerings being made.
I'm getting flashbacks to like corporations law and some of the words that you're saying. I'm like, oh yeah, I remember learning about that 10 years ago and I've never had to think about it and I hope I never have to. But if I do, I'm absolutely calling you.
Yeah, we'll go get Julie.
Julie's the barrister. Julie's the director. Julie's both. If I have a problem with Julie, yeah. I want to ask you about the name of the firm and how you came up with that and what it means, because I'm quite intrigued.
I'm grateful for the question. Graveman, G-R-A-V-A-M-E-N. It's a name derived sort of from gravity, and it has come to mean sort of the essence of an argument or the essence of a dispute. So where you might say, hey, look, Mel, you're bringing an application against James for breach of contract, but the real gravamen is James didn't deliver the lawn mowing services that he said he'd deliver. So the gravamen's kind of the heart of the issue. And what I'd hoped to convey with the name was, look, yep, there's puffy stuff around and we can talk about the puff or we can get to the heart of the issue. And so with the name, I wanted to really deliver the message of plenty of good law firms around, plenty of smart lawyers around, totally fine and great, and you should use whoever you want to use. And I'd like to think one of the benefits that Graveman will be offering into the future is that focus. Is of like, yep, heaps of extraneous stuff we can talk about, but Graveman is what we're about. We're about getting to the core of it and dealing with the core issue and not allowing ourselves to incur the time and indeed the money of getting distracted on extraneous stuff. And so that's the message I wanted to deliver by selecting the name. There's also an element where it's a word you see pop up in judgments in pretty technical areas sometimes, and so I wanted to kind of convey a bit of sort of technical expertise, if you know, you know, energy kind of thing to it. So Graveman,
I didn't know.
now you do and now all listeners to council know as well. And so it's so, and the final criterion was I wanted it to be a name I was kind of proud of to sort of share around as well. So I'm excited. I'm coming to be excited. I've had a moment in extreme humility through most of the morning, but with thanks again to you, Mel, I'm sort of coming to understand that it's a scary thing to do, but it's also an exciting thing to do. And I'm looking forward to seeing how it goes.
I love what you've just said because it leads perfectly into my next question for you. You've made some really intentional and significant career changes through different firms, different partnerships, and you are now, you know, setting out your own shingle, starting your own firm. This is huge stuff. But the bigger picture is something that I think all of us can relate to, all lawyers and all professionals, where it comes to feeling comfort and feeling safe and everything's fine, and yet wanting to jump out of your comfort zone and try something new. So for in-house, that might be a new industry. That might be a bigger company. That might be a smaller startup, scarier company in a bigger role. What are some of the things that, you know, you tell yourself when you're on the precipice of making these big changes that you know, if you reflect over the ones that you've done and the one you've done this morning, what's the advice that you would give to other lawyers that want to make a change that's a little scary?
I'd adopt your advice, Mel, to feel the fear and do it anyway. There's an element where fear is just acknowledging there are some stakes. You know, it could fail. And so that fear I feel about hopping on a podcast and saying, hey, please think about my new law firm. There's a fear of like, oh, what if it doesn't go well? Or like, what if they phone? Or what if the website's down on their phone? And oh, what if they go to my Instagram and they don't like the, you know, the views I'm sharing there? Or what if? And so I'm sort of in the grip of that fear at the moment, but I'm trying to say to myself that yes, it is scary. And I don't know what the revenue of the firm is going to be in 6 months, because I'm not like jumping in with a huge established client base. And there is every chance that it will go extremely poorly. And I'm trying to feel all that fear, having been just an employed solicitor, although in a sort of partner director role for some of that time, for so long, there's an element of like, well, it's just down to numero uno now, and it's scary. And so I'd adopt your phraseology for anyone who's perhaps only done insurance law in-house or automotive in-house or whatever it may be, to say, yeah, like, it's scary, and it might fail. But there's an element of, you know, having to jump off the cliff, jump off the precipice. And so the feel of fear, but do it anyway, means you're making those important, difficult decisions that ultimately lead, you know, towards that path of how do you want to look back at yourself? Mel, as you'd advise at age 85, you know, having made these scary decisions.
Well said, my friend. Feel the fear and you are doing it anyway. Yeah.
And can I pull out now? Like, maybe I can still pull out. What do you reckon?
No, sorry. It's done. I've got the exclusive. And I am so grateful for your time. I love that we've just been able to do this. This is an exercise in, like, done is better than perfect, because there's someone setting up lunch over there making a noise, someone over there with a phone, there's kids in the pool. I think the mic cut out, but we fixed it. I don't know how this is going to sound on the other end. But you know what? We just having a chat and sharing some knowledge. And I love that personally, I've gotten over my fear of perfectionism, or it's a fear of not being perfect, and I'm allowing myself to just roll with it and have these conversations in this imperfect setting. And oh, mate, setting up the other coffees and the tea over there now. So I reckon that might be our cue. I reckon lunch is just about to come out, and I'm going to wrap it up. I'm so grateful that we got to speak on the same stage and now do this. I'm so excited for you and your firm. Let's finish up. Where can the listeners find you? Where can they connect? I mean, top tip, TikTok. That's what I'd say, because you're hilarious. Bloody love you on TikTok. But where would you suggest?
Thank you. I'd suggest finding me personally on LinkedIn. That's James Dapici, DApice. I'm called Coffee and a Case Note in a number of places, including TikTok. Thank you, Mel. That's very generous. And Graverman is the firm. But I don't want to weigh too heavily. Oh, sorry, this is back to our conversation. Oh, you don't have to follow me. It's fine. If you are inclined, love to hear from you. I'm on most locations of the internet, one of those names. Mel, it's been a super pleasure.
Yay!
Other private practice solicitors, sucked in. I'm the first private practice lawyer on here. Yes.
High five. Love it. Thank you, James. One more cheers.
Ding.
We've gone from coffee in a case note to mimosa in a podcast.
Let's get it.
Thank you, sir.
Cheers.
Yay.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Counsel. Please subscribe to the show so that you don't miss future episodes. And while you're there, it would mean the world to me if you could leave a review for this show. Tell me what you'd love to hear more of and where you're listening from. To learn more about in-house practice, follow me on LinkedIn and Instagram